Hello and welcome to the Veterans Ascend weekly podcast. Today we are honored to speak with Deborah Kate Fortin and John Gregory Vincent. John is a retired Navy Command Master Chief, having served 14 years on operational submarines. Deb is, among so many things, an author and the president of the Submarine Way, which is a subsidiary of the Genesis Group. John is one of the world's foremost experts on human behavior change, a former top Gallup consultant and executive coach. They have built and are applying the world's only patent-pending model for leadership development through their unique lens of inclusion. Deb's vast background includes several roles establishing and running call centers and operations in large and small companies. Deb's expertise working directly with clients to build effective programs to solve their business problems, from diversity, inclusion, and ethics challenges to turnover and engagement, make her a leading voice in the important work that she and John are doing. We are privileged to hear about the Submarine Way, the book, the concept of submarine diversity and inclusion, and why diversity and inclusion are so important to businesses, along with what's next. We will also hear about John's time as a Command Master Chief, his transition from the Navy, his journey to becoming an expert on human behavior change, and their insights on hiring veterans and their advice to veterans. So Deb and John, thank you so much for your time today. Please tell us kind of what sparked or ignited your journey to write Diversity and Inclusion Submarine Way, and why utilize the concept of submarine diversity and inclusion.
Yeah, but before we do that, Robin, you are doing great work with Veterans Ascend.
Yes.
And we appreciate you too and want to make sure that we recognize you. Really, really good work.
Thank you.
So, but to get to your question, quite a few years ago now, I was writing for a diversity and inclusion magazine, and I was doing that as a volunteer. Diversity and inclusion was a passion, and specifically harassment and bullying, especially cyberbullying, I thought was a huge issue in society. So I started writing for this magazine, and they asked me to speak. And we're strength-based people. John is, I mean, at the time he was working for Gallup, he was speaking all over the world. So I actually offered him up. And we went about to determine what we were going to speak on, and we sort of landed on the inclusive environment of a submarine. I'm going to let John talk about that for just a second.
It was very powerful. It was quite interesting, Robin. I'm quite extemporaneous and sort of a larger than life type keynote speaker. And this was a topic that, although I was passionate about from a support point of view, I'd never spoken in public about it. And Deb said, you know, why don't you talk about how inclusive submarines are, that you've always told me when boots hit the steel deck, nobody cares where you're from, black, white, gay, straight, you know, nobody cares. It's just, it's all about focus on the mission. It's all about being interdependent and collaborative. And she said, why don't you talk about that? And I said, well, I could, but there's not like there's a system or anything in there. And she said, this is Deb, to your opening, Robin, and Deb's background, which is different than my background. Very, very strategic. She said, all right, so let me get this right. Every 3 years, a submarine, 120 people completely turn over. It would be like a business unit or an entire company, 100% turnover from the owner, president, all the way down to the person hired yesterday. Yep, 100% turnover. And no effect on the outcome, no effect on the results, no effect on the product, no effect on the services. That's correct. She said, there's a system there.
Exactly.
There has to be a system. Well, lo and behold, as you know from Deb, she was right. I was wrong. There's a system.
And so a book came out of that. And then the phone started to ring. A book, which, by the way, became a bestseller in three different categories almost immediately, much to our surprise and delight. Because
congratulations.
Changed the world. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. So our goal was to change the world, and that was the beginning. Hadn't really thought beyond that, except the phone started to ring, and potential clients were calling us saying, love the book, what are you doing to help organizations? So we refocused the Genesis Group, started building curriculum, and started to help organizations change their cultures, help leaders operate in an environment where they were managing their biases, they were being stronger leaders. And from the moment a leader began to lead, they thought differently about their people. And I can say this, we are transforming cultures. It is incredible the work we're doing, and we're having fun too. But I would say our accomplishments based on client feedback are tremendous, and it's exactly what I think my heart needed when my heart needed it. So we're really excited.
That's wonderful. And I agree with you on the, you know, John, when you said it doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, but it matters the skills you bring to the table, which is exactly what Veterans Ascend is all about, right? It doesn't matter if you're male or female. It matters about the skills that you bring to the table and the mission that you're on as a team and as a unit. And really, that's awesome. I love that. So John, tell us a little bit about your service in the Navy, a day in the life of a Command Master Chief, if there is a typical day, right? And your transition and kind of your journey after the Navy.
Yeah, absolutely. My journey to Command Master Chief was a bit interesting, but I can't tell that story without starting where my human behavioral expertise came from, which is those years I spent on submarines. I did something fairly rare that I essentially, you know this, Robin, a lot of the people in the audience may not, but enlisted pay grades go from E1 to E9. And I showed up on my first submarine as, I don't know, an E1 or an E2. And I didn't leave essentially until I was a Master Chief and then selected for Command Master Chief. So I never went to shore duty. I just stayed on submarine. So I was a tip of the spear operational submarine person for almost my first 15 years. Picked up Master Chief, applied and was selected for the Command Master Chief program and went to a very large, very dysfunctional training command. I was sort of handpicked that they needed somebody completely different. And
John was, I think, famous for his ability to be able to work with teams, build teams, build leaders and all of that. So it wasn't accidental that this was chosen.
Absolutely. Well, anybody who can spend 14 years on a submarine has some skills.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's one way to say it.
We got some other things going on too, but that's another podcast. Psychology channel. So when I got there, Robin, it was as close to like I wasn't even in the military anymore. And that wasn't that, I'm not saying that to be this disparaging. I didn't recognize any of this. It was essentially a massive schoolhouse. And their approach was not hyper-focused on mission. Their approach was not hyper-focused on the client, if you will, which was the fleet. So I just did what I knew how to do, which is understand individuals, build teams, and focus people on the mission. And we did a lot of very, very radical things there. So a life in the day of that Command Master Chief was nothing like they had ever seen before, which is we're going to go meet our clients. We're actually going to get on ships. We're going to get underway. We're going to see what they need. We're going to come back. We're going to redesign this curriculum. We're talking about 7 bases around the country and thousands of civilians and military personnel. This is a huge training command. But whatever, you start one day at a time. What I realized there, Robin, was my real gift wasn't that I could navigate nuclear submarines. My real gift is I had an ability to understand people, the differences in people, and how to put them together in a highly functioning group, super focused on a mission. Lo and behold, you can actually make a nice living on that outside of the United States Navy. So,
which you've discovered with Veterans Ascend, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely, sure.
So I took what sort of almost was taken for granted because I spent so many years on submarines, but then had to be very intentional in this wildly different environment that I struggled, frankly, at the beginning. But then I just took what I know best, that human behavioral piece, and I started applying it. And I realized, you know, this works anywhere. And so much so that I retired after 20 years. The Navy had a plan for me to continue on to great things. And I had a plan to, like, if you're not going to let me go back to sea, I can make more money elsewhere. Love you a lot. But I'm an operational guy. I'm not an office guy. So I transitioned and I went to CBS television. Pretty a natural transition there to go from this to that. And then shortly thereafter started the company, the Genesis Group, again, specializing in human behavior and transformations and really leadership development through this lens that we've created. So that's a day in the life of a Command Master Chief, where it all started and how it's brought me full circle and how I used it to transition.
Yeah. That's awesome. And congratulations on your promotion and trajectory. I tell people I made E7 right when I got out of the Navy, and I've been in for 9 years, and that was a fast trajectory. So, but to be Command Master Chief in 20, it's amazing. So congratulations on that. So, all right. So give us a couple highlights from the book. the mission of what you guys are doing and talk about the impact. You've talked about that a little bit, but talk about a little bit more the impact to the businesses, the impact to the associates of these companies, and why diversity and inclusion matters so much to businesses.
Well, probably my thoughts about the book would be different. Well, I know they are different than what our readers or what our clients are saying. So I'll talk about it from their perspective. So readers have commented on the fact that the book is really practical and it's easy to read and it's easy to apply. And we have one city that every single one of their middle managers has a copy of the book. And at least several of the directors in that city are sort of directing their people to read the book and apply a lot of the communication pieces and other practical tools in it. So I would say it's that. From a fun perspective, readers obviously love the submarine stories because, I mean, they're pretty incredible. They're very true.
They are.
Incredible. And that environment comes to life, I think, from the book, right down to the fact that it smells like a bunch of unwashed bodies, because basically that's what it is. So you have to learn more from the book. That's the hook. Why are the bodies unwashed in the book? So
that's a good hook, Ted.
That was like the most random thought.
I know. But we talk about that in the course too, because here you are building in our courses, you are building leaders from the most difficult environment. And we know from our backgrounds in the business world, Robin, that the business world can be a pretty hostile environment too. So to build leaders in that hostile environment is difficult. Well, these are practical tools, not only the workshops, but the book are practical tools to build leaders in the most difficult environments where you don't have the money to do professional development, or environments where maybe you don't have the ability to choose your leaders. You have to go with the team that you have, which of course is very representative of the submarine force, where you don't always get to pick people, and you always don't get to pick the number of people that you need. Who you have on that mission is who you have, very similar to the business world. So all of it is extremely practical.
Yeah, a very, very practical application of what starts off kind of many, many people, when we put the book or they buy the book or they see the book or we hand the book out as part of our work with clients, and they go, okay, diversity and inclusion, the submarine way. Interesting, but confusing. But at the end of the day, the principles in there, like when I hear an organization we're working with and they go, John, let's get this out on the table right now. We're short staffed. So that's a huge challenge. Or, you know, it's very hard to find talented people. The economy's good. And I just look them straight in the eye and I say, you know, I don't even know how many times I deployed on a submarine, but this number I know with absolute certainty, we were never full crewed. Not one time did I get underway on a nuclear submarine where you can't cut corners and go, well, we just won't monitor the reactor this time. So I don't even.
And it's not like you could go back to shore and, you know, just pick up the next, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, boss. We're four people down.
And that's always true in the business world, too.
Exactly.
So never fully staffed.
You're always working with, you know, maybe 2/3 of the people that you need, regardless of the circumstances, whether it's difficult to hire or you don't have the budget. That's reality.
So the mindset out of submarines, which translates perfectly to the private sector or to any organization, is gut it. That's a challenge. It's a challenge in healthcare. It's a challenge in universities. It's a challenge in cities. It's a challenge in police forces. We got that part. So who do you have? How do you maximize them?
And how do you keep them?
Spend zero time on the complaint, if you will, of being short-staffed, because you're short-staffed. Now, we'll try, you know, we can try to do something about that. But the real thing you need to focus on is, are you getting the most out of the people that you already have?
And are you reducing turnover so you're keeping every valuable person that you have? And that's a real problem with a lot of the organizations that we work with. Keeping their good people is the biggest issue they have.
Absolutely. Excellent. No, I won't give too much away from the book either because I want people to read it. But it is very practical, and it is so easy to just take what you're telling them in the book and apply it. So everyone should read it. It's fantastic. All right, so let's talk about, John, kind of from a veteran's perspective, and Deb, you know, you've done a lot of hiring and worked with a lot of organizations. Talk about what do you want employers to know about hiring veterans and kind of what they bring to the table, and then what advice would you give to the service members and veterans in their transition?
Yeah, that's great. We work with veterans, so John, why don't you talk about that?
As you know, Robin, and certainly Deb knows, a wild passion for mine since I've retired has been helping others transition. I'm actually on the faculty of the Honor Foundation, and they specialize in spec op guys. So we work with this Navy SEALs, Delta Force, Marine Raiders, Green Berets, and
probably the most difficult guys to transition.
Yeah, they tend to be the most amped up. They're the most amped up, and they see the least relevant skills to the private sector. But here's I'm answering all questions. What do veterans bring to the table that they need to think about more? And if you want me to talk more, I will, but I'm just going to do an overcap. What is an employer getting from a veteran? There's always this low-hanging fruit. Well, you know, those military people, they bring leadership. And that's a voice drop there. And that is like so underwhelming to what your average veteran
brings. Very important,
brings.
But
here are the five things that I think almost every, nothing is an absolute, but almost every veteran brings to an organization. Veterans need to be able to position this more effectively when they're talking to potential employers. And employers need to understand you're getting a heck of a lot more than somebody who's disciplined and has some leadership training. Here's what a veteran brings. There's five things. Situational leadership, which is very different than positional leadership. It is absolutely the norm when you're in the field, when you're underneath the ocean, when you're someplace where there's nobody else, somebody gets hurt, somebody gets injured, you look around, somebody needs to take charge, and you take charge. Military folks are wired, whether they're enlisted, whether they're officers, that things are going to continue to happen, and we're not going to get all wrapped up in who's got what on their collar. We're going to do situational leadership. So everyone is in the mindset of I am a leader and I have a responsibility to lead. So that's situational leadership. The second thing that almost every veteran brings is critical thinking. Literally taking a look and very quickly analyzing what's going on using critical thinking skills, because people kind of get the life and death thing, but lots of jobs in the military are not life and death, but almost all of them require critical thinking. Which leads to the next one, the third one, which is complex problem solving. I've never seen so many 21-year-olds be able to take an issue and a problem and very, very quick take that problem and say, because they're using critical thinking, to work through and apply complex problem solving. Probably somebody that most organizations wouldn't trust cleaning a storeroom. They're operating a nuclear reactor on a submarine. Why? Because situational leadership, critical thinking, leading to complex problem solving, and then the fourth thing, decisive decision making. You're not going to find military units where people are raising their hand going, don't you think we should do something? No, right? I mean, so they just make decisive decisions, but they don't make crazy decisions because it's based on critical thinking, complex problem solving, leading to decisive decision making. And then the fifth and final thing is the hyper focus on results and decision. These are five things that almost all veterans bring to almost any workplace. And Deb and I work and our company works in universities, in Fortune 300s, smaller clinics, in very large hospital systems, in municipalities, in federal agencies. We can tell you that these are five things that are usually lacking in almost every organization. And most veterans have it in spades, but they undersell it. They undersell it because they're just so trained in it that they go, well, of course I do those things. Everybody does. No,
right.
Almost nobody does. So those are the five things that I uncovered and unpacked when I realized I was not going to stay in the Navy. I said, what do I really do well that applies? And I didn't have five at the time. It wasn't that polished. But over the years, I've developed this five. And these are the five critical functions that employers need to understand that a veteran brings. And veterans need to be more articulate in saying how they deliver that.
And my advice to businesses, I was a business person, as you know, at ADP, who recruited from separating military people often. And one of my positions was to look there first. Instead of looking at other places for the talent and then ending up with veterans, start with veterans. And knowing what John said, the five really important skills that they bring to the table, and look there first. And that would be my advice to businesses.
Another really good tip for businesses. It's one thing to say that, you know, I mean, it's low hanging fruit, right? Everybody supports clean air and good schools and hiring veterans. But actually doing it is what matters. And I think working with, yes, with an organization and a company such as yours that can make something that might seem a little overwhelming and a little daunting. A lot of people want to do the right thing. A lot of companies and organizations want to do the right thing, but they're not exactly sure how to do the right thing. And I think that's where what you're doing, Robin, is so critical. Because you're that bridge.
Absolutely. Yeah, that connection piece. So a couple things I want to touch on. I've never really heard, and this is what makes you so great, John, I've never really heard anybody talk about situational leadership. And I put it in those terms, and that is brilliant, because it truly is. You go into a situation, and that's where you figure out what needs to happen. What are you solving? And you're doing it situationally, not just broadly. It's very focused and very compact. So that is awesome. And yes, we, you know, at Veterans Ascend, it's all about that connection piece to help employers have that connection to that talent pool. Sadly, there was a U.S. Chamber Small Business Index recently that said 80% of the people, the businesses that they polled, said it's important to hire veterans for their company for all of the things you just talked about, but only 1 in 10 of them intentionally recruited veterans in the past year. So very, very sad. And part of it is the barriers that HR is busy. They don't have a lot of time. They have less than 1% of HR have any military knowledge to help them understand how those skills fit into their organization. And they just don't take the time.
Yeah, I think that. And a lot of times I would actually help veterans with their resumes when I was hiring veterans to help them understand how they could translate those skills into business vernacular.
Absolutely.
I think that's true. Just taking the time that is important. But it's also why you're so valuable, because you actually help them with that, which I think gives them an advantage.
Yeah, thank you. It's a privilege to do the work I do. I don't even call it work. My husband gets on me sometimes. It's like, you're still in that chair, and I've been here for 12 hours. Like, it's not work to me. This is fun. This is exciting, and it's worthwhile. So it doesn't feel like work. But so quickly tell us about the next project, the next book, if you can share a little bit about it without giving too much away. That would be great.
Well, our next book is coming out probably around the May 2020 timeframe. It's called Up Periscope, and it's basically, it was a request from our clients who loved that leadership is all through other book, and leadership is woven through all of our workshops, of course, because it's probably the most important thing that you can do, and our speeches. But they wanted something that was specifically addressed the 5 to 10 things that individuals could do to develop their personal leadership, their leadership in businesses and their careers, but also at home. So Up Periscope is the 5 anchors of leadership, with some other chapters of the book that sort of anchor the 5 anchors of leadership in the book. So we're about 2/3 of the way done. Simon & Schuster is publishing the book for us, and we're super, super excited. We actually just launched our course called The 5 Anchors of Leadership, which came directly from the book that's not published. So anybody who attends that workshop is seeing it for the first time, even before the book is out there. So yeah,
world premiere was yesterday.
Yes,
awesome.
And it went super, super well. I think those attendees walked away with a very, very probably new grasp of leadership that they can apply. Their practical tool.
That's awesome. Go ahead, John.
What was cool about it, Robin, is it's Deb understates as she understates everything, but this literally was a book requested by our clients. They're like, you know, there's a reason this is a patent pending leadership development, because there's nothing like this. And everybody right. says there's nothing like this, but we actually have the U.S. Patent Office saying there's nothing like this. And they're like, could you distill this in some form? And it actually started with some coaching and some requests for some deeper training. And it sort of led to kind of a request for a second book that was all of our, as you say, very practical, very relevant, no Mob's Law of Hierarchy of Needs in anything we write here. But how do you actually develop yourself, and how do you cascade that leadership? So I think it's really cool that our client base in the last year has asked us to produce this book, essentially, because a lot of people use diversity and inclusion, the Submarine Way, as essentially their workbook. And they use it to supplement the courses and supplement our online training and supplement other things for reinforcement. And they wanted something pure in the leadership space, which I think is a pretty cool way to create a book, is when your clients ask you to write one.
Yeah,
absolutely. Now, it's a testament, obviously, to what you're doing and the impact that you're having. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
It's wonderful. I look forward to reading that. So John, well, first of all, thank you for your service. I have to say, go Navy, just because, you know, it's near and dear to my heart. But thank you both.
Thank you for your service, Robin.
That's right. Thank you for your service, Doug. Robin.
Thanks, John. And thank you both for the great work that you're doing. We appreciate you sharing these great insights today. We wish you so much continued success, and I look forward to the second book. I look forward to continuing to walk down your journey with you and just keep all this going. So congratulations. And listeners, for more information on The Submarine Way, please visit their website at www.thesubmarineway.com. And for more information on Veterans Ascend or to sign up today, please visit our website at www.veteransascend.com. Thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful day.